people, it's April 23rd, 2024. I'm Dave Rubin. This is the Rubin Report. We are live streaming on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Share, subscribe, tap the notification bell. Join us for the postgame, rubinreport.locals.com. We also have a live chat going on over there if you want to get some information to my people while we are live streaming. And we had no cold open for you today because we wanted to just get right into it. Today, we are going to kick off the show talking a little bit about the, the woke who've gone full jihad. We're going to connect that to some of what's been going on with the media and our politicians who are endlessly giving money to do a whole bunch of things all over the world, but seem to care very, very little about what's going on right here in the US of A. And, just some other general stupidity and nonsensical drivel. Why don't we start, though, with a guy who I interviewed just not too long ago, about a month and a half ago, when we went to Israel. He is a really incredible speaker. If you did not see my interview with Yosef Haddad, we'll link to it down below so you can find it and you can watch it after the show. Really wonderful. He is an Arab Israeli, so he is a full citizen of Israel. He happens to be Arab. And he has become a staunch defender of Israel. He went on Piers Morgan's show to argue with some of the sort of crazy leftists who are defending the calls for Intifada and River to the Sea and the rest of it. And it's just so brilliant. And this will really set us up for today's show, which really is just about like basic truth and American values and goodness versus communism, wokeism, and endless destruction. And the choice is yours.
I find it very, very amusing that you are saying that they are peaceful protesters while they're chanting Intifada, Intifada.
Do you agree you don't know that what American means, students
or
are
you are
terrorists.
Lying, or you are so brainwashed that you cannot even see the truth in front of your eyes. Intifada, Intifada.
I'm asking
I will
you a
repeat
simple
it again.
Question.
The more of death of Jews and Arabs. So, when you chant
you
like this, with the whole group chanting like this, that is the
that
chant.
These
so do you agree that they should not chant Intifada, Intifada? Do you agree that anybody who wears a symbol of Hamas is a terrorist supporter? Do you agree with all
that? Let me bring in Crystal. Crystal?
Okay. So first of all, Intifada means uprising. Okay.
What do you mean Intifada means uprising? Have you seen Intifada, first Intifada? Have you seen the second Intifada?
Human rights,
you don't know anything. You are not from the Middle East.
Suddenly that's over the line. But let me just say, listen, people have a right to be offended by whatever they want to be offended by.
You're saying Intifada as if it's okay. Do you know what Intifada means?
I want to ask Crystal one question about Intifada. Can you tell me about an Intifada that wasn't a violent uprising during the 75 years of this conflict?
Listen, you can support the nonviolent parts of an uprising and condemn the violent parts.
No, but that wasn't my question. My question was, can you tell me of any intifada in the 75 years of this conflict that hasn't involved a violent uprising? So that when somebody who is Jewish hears the word intifada, they don't automatically think violent uprising because they've all been violent.
I think that's fair. Piers, I think that's a fair point. Now, the first intifada, I would point out, was overwhelmingly peaceful.
She's just an absolute clown. First off, I want to give Piers Morgan credit, right? I have a little bit of a love-hate thing with him. Sometimes he's really on point, and sometimes I find him a little whatever you want to call it. Happy to sit down with him anytime. I think we're working that out. We can discuss the process of interviewing and hosting these debates, which is all good, and all that stuff. But Yosef is just great there. Like, everyone knows when they are calling for Intifada, they are calling for violent revolution. Everyone knows what River to the Sea means, except the people calling for it just don't know which river and which sea. And then these pathetic leftists, like Crystal Ball, go live in Gaza and see how it works out for your leftist ideas and your off-the-shoulder outfits. Like, it will not go well. They know it's a call for violence. They know it's a call for genocide of the Jews. And by the way, the Arabs that live there, the 2 million Arabs like Yosef Haddad, right? And they killed Arabs and they killed nationals from, I think, 20 some odd countries on October 7th and the rest of it. I know you guys get all that. But I love just seeing this like blatant destruction of these people with kind of fairly obvious, simple questions. Anyway, here's a bit more from Piers.
And just this weekend, we're talking about hundreds of my peers shouting, there's only one solution, Intifada revolution. Intifada is a call to genocide against Jewish people. This does not represent a minority.
No, but that wasn't my question. My question was, can you tell me of any Intifada in the 75 years of this conflict that hasn't involved a violent uprising? So that when somebody who is Jewish hears the word Intifada, they don't automatically think violent uprising because they've all been violent.
I think that's fair. Piers, I think that's a fair point. Now, the first Intifada, I would point out, was overwhelmingly peaceful, but that doesn't erase the fact that there were violent acts. That's why I said, listen, if you're offended by the rally chants, that's okay. It's still free speech. But I think to smear this entire protest group of saying they have a violent intent, you can ask the NYPD chief who arrested protesters at Columbia. He literally said they were all nonviolent. So I just think this is such a clear attempt to distract from what's happening in Gaza and try to change a conversation and a debate that has been lost by those who would say, listen, Israel, no matter what, and we're going to support them and ship weapons no matter what.
Well, I think, look, I would just say, before I come to Youssef, I would say this, that Vajahat, you do keep talking about peaceful protest, but actually, if you are chanting things like Intifada at a bunch of Jewish people, then they are not going to see that as a message of peace. They're going to see that as a direct threat on their lives. So they're not, that's not a peaceful protest to me.
Yeah, so that's fine work by Piers. And Crystal is defending a bunch of people that would gladly behead her for all of her progressive views. But that's just, you know, progressives aren't the brightest, the brightest people around. Everyone knows. They're also, by the way, not only are they lighting things on fire and they're pushing and fighting with police officers and calling for genocide, they're stopping Jewish students from being able to go onto campus. The head of Hillel, which is the Jewish organization at Columbia, told a group of 200 Jewish students that there's no way that they can keep them safe on campus, so they shouldn't even come onto campus. And here is last night at Columbia. Do these seem like peaceful people who just want to make sure that there's another country in the Middle East that'll have equal rights and gay stuff for everybody?
There is only one solution! There is only one solution! Intifada revolution!
We don't want no two states. Oh, so there's one solution, and we don't want two states for two people. We have one solution. There was a Hitler guy who had a final solution. That was not very good. So everyone knows exactly what these people are doing, and more people are waking up to it. And again, I think it's great that Piers is hosting some of these debates, because these people, their bullshit basically just crumbles like a wet paper bag once it's put up against anything remotely decent. Speaking of bullshit that crumbles, Ilhan Omar is a member of the Hamas caucus. And what happened? We're good? Okay. Ilhan Omar is a member of the Hamas caucus over there. And here is what she tweeted about what's going on over at Columbia. Throughout history, protests were co-opted and made to look bad so police and public leaders would shut them down. That's what we are seeing now at Columbia University. The Columbia protesters have made clear their demands and want their school not to be complacent in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Public officials and media making this about anything else are inflaming the situation and need to bring calmness and sanity back. First off, there is no genocide in Gaza. There is a war between Israel and Hamas. And in a war, people do get killed. Hamas, you guys know this, they use their own people as human shields. They build hospitals that are not really functioning hospitals. They are basically to protect their weapons beneath. They've got about 100 hostages. If they would just release the hostages, Israel would end this right now. So she's a liar and a manipulator, and she knows they're calling for violence. And these are the same people, the same progressives who offered us trigger warnings and all of the rest of the nonsense, right? Safe spaces and everything else when it came to discussing other things. But now it's just like unhinged hate that we have to absolutely defend. By the way, everyone has the right to free speech, and the First Amendment protects your right to free speech. What they are purposely doing is getting as close to directly calling for violence as they absolutely can, because they're, you know, you can say a lot of things about these people, but they are clever in the way they use our system against us. That is what they do. Anyway, Alfred the Great, it's a funny account on Twitter. He retweeted Ilhan Omar's statement and wrote this: Ilhan, get off Twitter. Your daughter is homeless and starving. You might wonder what Alfred the Great is referencing. But yes, it turns out that Ilhan Omar's daughter was at Columbia and she is no longer there. We've got some info from Colin Rugg. Ilhan Omar's daughter, Isra Hirsi, says she is now homeless and hungry after being suspended from school for her anti-Israel protests. And here is some video of her now, of course, because she is the victim after being suspended. Here she is on MSNBC, which is really just at this point, just a Hamas-run television network. It's just an embarrassing cesspool of evil. And here she is talking how she'll remain homeless and starving until the school does something about it.
Do other student groups have this kind of target on their back, or do you feel that you are being targeted because of the fact that it is in solidarity with Palestinians and against what Israel is doing to Palestinians?
Oh, this is 100% targeted. Every single protest that we have, there's a group of counter-protesters that bring all of their items, their flags and things like that, and they're not seen as having unsanctioned protests or really receive the kind of disciplinary warnings that many of our fellow organizers receive just for being seen at these protests. And so there is definitely some hypocrisy here, especially you can kind of see it with the students that were sprayed us with the chemical weapons and the fact that there's no public information as to what happened to them, but rather the university is actively discussing what is happening to the students here and making it a whole public spectacle rather than when we haven't done anything to physically harm students, whereas those that sprayed those chemical weapons physically harmed students.
Nasty little hoe. First off, the counter-protesters come there with American flags and Israeli flags, and they're peaceful and they sing songs like the national anthem, things like that. They're not calling to exterminate anyone or kill anyone or destroy a country or anything else. But ultimately, she has to be the victim. And I love fucking pathetic journalist, whatever you want to call that guy, the host of that. I'm in a mood today. The host of that show, who's like, are they doing this to any other groups, or is it just you guys who are defending the Palestinians? And it's like, yes, they're doing this to the lesbian swimmer group too. They're calling for genocide, you morons. We'll do more in just a second, but I want to talk to you guys about 1775 coffee, which is what I'm drinking this morning, and it's clearly working. Are you a sleepy Joe who has zero cognitive performance? Scared of walking upstairs without being worried you're going to fall down? Do you struggle to muster the focus and brain power for the basic things in life, such as eating ice cream or riding a bike? You need to stop drinking woke liberal coffee and start your day by drinking Rumble's very own 1775 coffee. Never mind that it'll be the best tasting coffee you've ever had in your life. It's seriously good. It's also ethically sourced from a family farm in the high altitude mountains of Bolivia. So instead of waking up tomorrow morning and drinking your mold infested, big corporation owned woke ideology coffee that's probably making you sick from the pesticides it's sprayed with, try Rumble 1775 coffee. Support freedom of speech and build a parallel economy that actually values you. Go to 1775coffee.com right now and pick up your first bag. Use the code Ruben to save 10% off your first order. My favorite roast is the dark. Everyone knows Dave Rubin loves it dark. You won't regret it for a moment. Level up your morning routine with a bag of 1775 coffee and sleep well at night knowing that your hard-earned dollars are going towards supporting freedom-loving creators like me on Rumble, not the woke mob. And I am drinking it right now, and clearly it's affecting my mental state. Okay, so look, we can show you the videos of these bullshit artists at MSNBC and these lying, LARPing, furry jihadists at Columbia, and we can show you that all day long. But I think what we also have to show you is that good, decent people are waking up, and we have to call these, you know, the problem is that it's, okay, we got the crazy lunatics, right? And then you have a sliver of good people, and then most of us just in the middle that just don't know what to do about any of this, and we're otherwise busy, and we have family and friends, and we wanna eat food and go out and do things and be involved in sports in our community. So then the bad guys just keep chipping away at all of that constantly. But more and more good people are speaking out, and we have to keep finding them and elevating them so that it gives a little courage to everyone else. I want to show you a video of the Palantir CEO, Alex Carr. Palantir, for those of you that don't know, we've talked about it a little bit. It's a Peter Thiel-founded company. It's basically a software company that develops data fusion platforms. So they do AI learning and machine-assisted learning and human-driven data analysis. It's fancy, fancy stuff. designed to organize information, basically. That's the sort of simple version of it. Anyway, here's the CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp, talking about these students at these quote-unquote elite universities.
I am not a legislator, but I am running one of the coolest companies in the world, and I'm telling young people, you are breathing the vapors of a dangerous, new, fake, and self-destructive religion when you are sitting at your elite school pretending because you watched TikTok twice and got an A+ on some crazy paper because your professor couldn't get a job anywhere else, that you actually understand the world. And you're not welcome at my company.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. Like, the guy is running a super cool, future-forward, AI-driven company. And when they're hiring, they no longer want these kids that come from these woke schools, these supposed elite universities whose brains have been broken by TikTok. They think they've become racist in the name of anti-racism. I've really just had it with these fucking people. I can't tell. I don't know, something about being at the Passover Seder last night and telling the story about Passover and then watching what this stuff's going on, it really got to me. But the point is that companies, Palantir or otherwise, will just not want to hire any of these people anymore, right? And then they won't be able to get jobs, and then they will use that as evidence that the system doesn't work. Got a couple more of Karp, because I think he's just knocking it out of the park right now. Here's number two.
Dr. Alex Karp, he runs what is arguably on the cutting edge of one of the most leading software, you could say manufacturers. You're on the edge of AI.
You may not have learned that the West is a noble, endearing, and potentially durable project if you have been imbibing the vaporous, deadly flames of many elite institutions. But at Palantir, we believe in the West. We believe in defending the West. We believe the West should have the best software, the best AI. And I went there because when Russia invades the sovereign territory of Ukraine or when Hamas commits acts of terrorism, the West must stand and show that it's strong, or these things will become part and parcel of our everyday life. And this should not be a controversial position. And quite frankly, I think it is not a controversial position. Unfortunately, too few of us stand up and say, this is what we believe. We are going to put our company behind it. And if you do not want to work at our company or you do not want to work with us, that is perfectly fine. But the values that America embodies of freedom, liberty, justice, meritocracy, that everyone gets a reasonably fair shot, are those values are at stake when people aggress and transgress, and more importantly, we do nothing, we say nothing, we do not articulate why we think this, and we, quite frankly, do not defend ourselves. Silicon Valley is one of the most wonderful places in the world. Way too many of people in Silicon Valley do not have the sense that God gave a goat. And just because you have a 180 IQ does not mean you are smarter than a goat.
True, it's true. All right, I've calmed down now. I think you guys get the point that we can actually have people and organizations and institutions and companies that believe that American values are good. And, you know, he references all of these people that just don't do anything in it because more of us need to stand up. For some reason, a huge amount of us are afraid of Ilhan Omar's daughter and a bunch of furries LARPing as jihadists at Ivy League schools, and we shouldn't be afraid of them. But the more air we give them, the more oxygen we give them, the more power they get, and the more control and destruction they will create across society. I want to show you one more, Karp, because I think the guy's just knocking it out of the park right now.
There are growing concerns about AI's role in the sort of disruption that we see around the world at present. False and misleading information fueled by AI was top of the global risks report released at Davos this year. Do you share these concerns? It was at the top of a lot of
top of a list of. I compare this conference to that conference. I don't want to get. It's like it's just. Yes, of course it's a problem. But the primary problem is not disinformation, which I'm against, and I would help fight. But the primary problem is that the people listen to it because primary functions of their government aren't working, and they're asking themselves why doesn't it work. And so you have to fix those underlying functions. Pretending that is the primary risk to democracy is totally a backfire move. Of course it's a risk. Mm. Of course it should be dealt with. Of course security services should fight this. Foreign influence into a country is illegal, unethical, and should be fought and I would be happy to help out fighting that. But the primary risk to a society is not fake information. It's a society that's willing to believe the fake information because they're wondering, why doesn't my school work? Why doesn't my border work? Why have I been taught things in school that don't work? Why do I know nothing about software? Why am I being told that poetry will pay my bills when in fact it's not even good poetry? It's like that is the primary risk to a society. And all this other stuff is just a way of saying, I cannot deal with the primary problems. I can deal with the secondary problems, and it won't work.
I love, one of my true joys of doing the show is when I find new voices that we can start amplifying that are telling the truth, right, across disciplines. And it's like, there he is, and they want him to talk about disinformation, right? Because the powers that be in the globalists, they're always concerned about disinformation, because what they mean by disinformation is people who are thinking for themselves and not buying the narrative. What he's saying there is, no, disinformation is not the problem. If disinformation exists, and if governments are trying to confuse people intentionally, foreign governments, we can talk about that. But the real issue is that none of the shit works. We're sending kids to universities to get degrees in nonsensical poetry, and they come out as Hamas supporters. People are wondering why the border doesn't work, why the economy doesn't work. That is the real issue. You guys never want to focus on that because you guys are all trying to destroy all these things so that you can usher in your new world. So I suspect that is not the last couple times we will play some videos of this guy. And I want to connect what he talked about right there, because really what he's talking about is that the priorities of the powers that be are not correct, right? Like right now, if you were in the United States government, what do you think your number one priority would be? If I was an elected representative, I'm pretty sure my number one priority right now would be our border, because as you guys know, 7 million people have come in here in the last 3 years, and we have no idea what they believe or who they are or where they're going or what their intentions are or anything else. Well, instead, we didn't get to cover it yesterday, but over the weekend, yes, they did it on a Saturday, we gave billions and billions more to Ukraine, and it feels like one of the most giant, blatant grifts of all time. So we'll get to that in just a second. Let me talk to you guys about Privacy Academy real quick. Guys, it's common knowledge that Google is listening through your microphones. Even the most anti-conspiracy people know this is true. But did you know that Google put hidden microphones in their Google Nest device and people didn't find out about it until 2 years after the device was released? Or that Google keeps your voice recordings and stores them for posterity? If hidden microphones and voice recordings are not enough, what about the fact that they track Android phone locations even if your location services are turned off and you don't have a SIM card attached? I recently listened to a privacy class that Glenn Mader held, and he said that Google has tracking code placed into the fonts that websites use. It's insane. They want to gather as much information as they possibly can, and they don't just use that information to sell dog toys or cruises to Italy. They do it because they're working together with Big Brother, and they always have. Google's origins come from the CIA and NSA research grants. They want to fund Google in order to create a surveillance state. They call the operation Birds of a Feather, like the saying, birds of a feather flock together. They were talking about how these geese and other birds fly in large, predictable shapes. The CIA and NSA predicted that people who share interests and beliefs online would also move in predictable patterns. They just needed a tool that could gather all of the information to form these predictions. It's scary and overwhelming to think about, but that's not why I'm talking about this. I'm tired of reading articles about how the world is going to end, that there's nothing we can do about it. That's why I asked Glenn about what steps we can take to get Google out of our lives, and he actually had some great suggestions. He said that it's possible to de-Google your life, and he even wrote an ebook on the topic. After some discussion, he decided that he would love to give us that ebook completely for free. You can get your own de-Google your life document by going to privacyacademy.com/Dave. I really recommend that you do, because everyone should get away from Google and take their online privacy more seriously. I mean, do you think that the institutions are not looking out for you? Well, that will get us right to what I want to talk about here. So we've got a problem in this country, and it's not just that border that I talked about. It's also our absolutely insane spending. So before we get to Ukraine specifically, here is a chart from the US Treasury on fiscal data. And hot diggity dog, look at that outstanding debt just since basically 1995, right? So we're looking at basically 30 years of a debt explosion over there. Put that back up for just 1 second. I mean, look at that. That thing is basically hockey sticking right now. It is just absolutely blowing up. And you might go, all right, well, where is this debt coming from? I mean, we do things like the Inflation Reduction Act, where we just print more money, thus causing more inflation. But they put the word reduction in there and it confuses people. We quote unquote wipe out debt, which actually isn't wiping out student debt. It's just moving the debt to elsewhere. And then, of course, we just give all of these countries tons of money and we don't know what the hell they're doing with it or anything else. Here's a tweet from Melissa Tate. Ukraine flag waving U.S. Congress with the help of 112 Republicans just voted to send $61 billion to Ukraine. These are the same people that refused to give Trump just $8 billion to secure our border. Let that sink in. And I'm sure many of you saw this over the weekend, but here's some video out of the chamber of the United States House of Representatives, not waving American flags, but waving some other country's flag. Clear on something here. I do not think that the United States has no role in the world. I think we are the last remaining superpower. I think we are largely a force for good. I think we've made some mistakes. I think there are things we can do to help Western values and some of those issues that the Palantir CEO was talking about before. I think we can spread some of those things. I don't believe in nation building. But we have no idea where any of this money is going as it pertains to Ukraine, right? We are funding a war that we haven't declared that we're in, and the guy that we're fighting in that war, Putin, has nukes. So, okay, we give $61 billion more dollars, and we give them tanks, and we give them planes, and we give them drones and missiles and everything else. Can they win that war, or does that just further entrench the war, and then eventually the guy with the nukes, if he's about to lose, has to do something unheard of, right? So it is just important to realize that in and of itself. But also, people are pissed. You know, the funny thing about American people is we are willing to do a lot for people across the world, while most countries don't. Most countries bitch and moan about everything and don't really do anything when there's bad things happening in the world. The Americans actually are willing to help. But what we're not willing to do is just completely watch the destruction of our country while we, in this case, I think you have to put quotes around it, help Ukraine, because I'm not sure we're helping Ukraine with all of this money. Check this out. This is Representative Gerald Connolly, who's a Democrat from Virginia. This is right after voting on that Ukraine funding. And tell me if this sounds like something you want to hear from an American representative, as we've just let 7 million people into the country.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border.
No, it's not. That border's like that way, and our border's kind of right here, and we should be able to secure our border, and that's not to say we can't do anything over there, although you people should explain what the end game is and a whole bunch more. But no, the Ukraine-Russia border is the, I'm not a wizard here, but the Ukraine-Russia border is the Ukraine-Russia border. And the American-Mexican border is the American-Mexican border. I know that Joe Biden thinks it's the American-Egypt border, but it's the American-Mexican border. We should be defending that. Like, nothing they say makes sense. Absolutely nothing they say makes sense. Take a look at this, because the Republicans went all in on this too, right? Mike Johnson pushed this thing through. Let's not forget, Matt Gaetz and a whole bunch of the MAGA Republicans, they really wanted to take out Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy, who I think was doing a pretty damn good job. Some of the most conservative members of Congress said he, Thomas Massie, Chip Roy, I mean, guys that are like the most libertarian, limited spending, no foreign aid type guys, they said that McCarthy was doing the best job they had seen. But the MAGA base, they took out McCarthy, they brought in Mike Johnson, and why is it that Mike Johnson is doing this?
I only vote for Leader Jeffries if we have to go through this again, but he has to get to the table with Leader Jeffries for Leader Jeffries to then allow different Democrats to actually go out and do something. We don't do things for you or save you because you did the bare minimum of doing your job. We've got to get something out of this. Listen, we know that the Republican policies that have been pushed thus far are failures. And so the only thing that we can do is when he is in a time of need, that is our time to negotiate. That is our time to make sure that we can push through and get something as well.
Did you catch what was going on there? I might have set it up a little bit strangely. What the Democrats basically are saying is, oh, Mike Johnson is weak. We can use him to push forward whatever we want, whether it's Ukraine money, probably crazy gender stuff, who knows what's coming with race stuff. And that is a problem because weak leaders, once you have a weak leader, you basically are just a hive. You're just a vessel for evil and stupidity. And if you want to see that, I'm going to show you now a video from 2018. Because right now, if you're in 2024, somehow the Democrats, they want to frame it somehow that those protesters that we're seeing everywhere, they're anti-war. They're anti-war. And anti-war is the position of the Democrats because they're the good guys. Here is AOC in 2018.
When it comes to unlimited war, we seem to be able to invent that money very easily. And to me, it belies a lack of moral priorities that people have right now, especially the Republican Party.
Well, and that's why there are elections. They have consequences.
Oh, AOC, that's funny because you just voted for $61 billion to Ukraine for endless war. So I'm starting to think you don't have sort of a grounding principle. It's just that whoever is in power, you're going to suck up to because you just want more power. And AOC, you know, you really got to watch out for her because as awful as she might be, and I think she is, I genuinely believe her to be a communist who is here to help usher in the destruction of America and everything else. The Democrats, the Biden thing, the man with dementia who's just standing there like somewhat in the way of the true radicals, it's like they are going to push him out at some point. Everyone sees that. There are no moderate Dems anymore, except for the guy with brain damage, who John Fetterman, who's now coming around, and he'll probably be a Republican by the end of his first term. Anyway, AOC and Biden, they're going to try to fix the climate on top of everything, because if they're going to give $61 billion to Ukraine, and then they're going to take some other cash and fix the climate. These people who could not do anything, they could not run a McDonald's if their life depended on it. Check out this picture from N Wokeness. This is great. So this is AOC and Joe Biden yesterday. They are at a historic climate action conference. And this is a great caption here. AOC and Biden are both thinking the same thing. Not my type, way too old for me. Like, that wins Twitter for the day. Let me tell you a little bit about their climate core operation. This is from Fox News. President Biden officially launched the so-called American Climate Corps, a program that is slated to mobilize tens of thousands of Americans for conservation and eco-friendly projects nationwide. The president's actions on the work program come on Earth Day and are part of broader actions that the White House unveiled Monday to commemorate Earth Day. In addition to the American Climate Corps announcement, the White House touted recent regulations blocking off 13 million acres of federal land from future oil drilling and revealed $7 billion in grants for mainly state-level solar projects. Overall, the Climate Corps will consist of 20,000 Americans who will work in a variety of roles combating climate change. The positions generally don't require previous experience and will be geared towards conservation, green energy, and environmental justice work. So that, you got it, guys. It's just another giant government program. And we'll get a whole bunch of people who aren't qualified to do anything, and they'll give us environmental justice, which is a phrase so stupid only a Democrat could have come up with it. Here is a future hopeful presidential candidate from the wacky progressives, AOC, thanking the man with dementia for ushering in more lunacy.
Today is a historic day and a landmark achievement for organizers and countless young people as we officially open the American Climate Corps to the public. I want to thank President Biden for working with us to take swift and bold executive action to protect the planet by launching the American Climate Corps, and also for investing billions in clean, resilient energy via the Solar for All competition, among so many other climate victories. As you'll hear in today's announcement, it is no accident that this president is overseeing the single biggest federal investment in tackling the climate crisis in our nation's history.
Swift and bold action to protect the planet by executive action, which is really funny because they keep saying he can't take swift and bold action via executive action to fix the border, but he can somehow save the planet. I want to connect this to an interview I did in D.C. About a year ago, well, maybe a little bit less than a year ago. This was with my representative, Maria Salazar, who's just wonderful, here in Miami. And here she is talking about the difference between the way she governs and the way some of her colleagues govern. I think you'll see that what AOC is doing there is just a giant socialist grift.
Some of the people that serve with me on the House of Representatives, even though they may have noble intentions, they are useful fools. Because what they think that what they're peddling is good for others. No, because they have never had the experience of being or living in Cuba or Venezuela. Go for 2 weeks to Havana. I always tell them, 2 weeks only. Now make it a week with a Cuban family living with no dollars and waiting to come to the United States. Go live with them for 1 week, and then you tell me what the beauties of socialism. Oh, no, because we don't really want the Cuban or the Venezuelan type of socialism, really. So what socialism would you like?
Isn't it interesting that everyone in the country knows AOC, and really outside of Florida, very few people know Representative Salazar, who's a great fighter for America? Like, which one of those people is more in line with your values, and which one of those people is constantly pushed on us by the corporate media? You see, you think there might be something going on there? Anyway, let me connect this now to some of the general lunacy related to everything we've talked about, because Joe Biden yesterday at his little climate conference with that climate, can I say it? Nah, I won't say it, but you know what I want to say. He was asked about what's going on with these protests over at Columbia, and listen to this stupidity.
Anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and how they're being moved.
Should the Columbia University president resign?
Right this way.
I didn't know that. I'll have to find out more about it.
Okay, so thank you, Joe, for condemning the anti-Semitic chants of River to the Sea and the calls for genocide and the fact that Jews can't show up to campus. Thank you for that. Then he also condemns the people who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. I think maybe, I know he's not that smart, but I think maybe he's talking about the protesters themselves who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians, the protesters who are rooting for a group called Hamas, which wants more dead Palestinians. I know, I'm giving him too much credit. He couldn't be that clever if his life depended on it. But do you see this mealy-mouthed, you know, it's very fine people on both sides, which was a hoax when Trump did it, and here it is. He can't just say, yes, I condemn the calls for genocide, and universities should allow for Jewish kids, just like everybody else, to learn without being threatened. I also condemn the people who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. What do you mean, the people who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians? Yes, they are being run by a genocidal terrorist organization. Like, fuck off. Anyway, here he is pretending that his uncle was eaten by cannibals.
We called him Uncle Bozy. He was shot down. He was an Army Air Corps before there was an Air Force. He flew single-engine planes, reconnaissance flights over New Guinea. He had volunteered because someone couldn't make it. He got shot down in an area where there were a lot of cannibals in New Guinea at the time. They never recovered his body, but the government went back when I went down there and they checked and found parts of the plane and the like.
Okay, so Joe Biden just completely made up a story that his uncle apparently was eaten by cannibals. Corinne Jean-Pierre was asked about that by Peter Doocy.
Why is President Biden saying that his uncle Bozy was eaten by cannibals?
So, you know, I answered this question yesterday. I believe I've seen some clips on your network about me answering this question. I don't have much to say beyond what I said to some of your colleagues. Look, I was there. I think you traveled with us too to Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if you were there at the memorial in Scranton. The president had a emotional and I think a symbolic moment. He had an opportunity as president to honor his uncle's service in uniform.
He had an emotional moment where he made up that his uncle was eaten by cannibals. I think we may have to shut the camera off. I don't know if it's the coffee today or it was Passover last night or what, but I don't know. It's not just Joe Biden and it's not just these diversity hires. It's the entire rot of the Democratic Party. They have completely lost their minds and they are dragging us all to the abyss of hell. And the other thing that, of course, they do is they use the system against any of the people who try to speak up against it. So now I want to show you another member of the Hamas caucus. This is Representative Premiya Jayapal. She is one ugly hoe I'm just doing it today, and we're just doing it this way, whatever. It's a special show, just whatever. Come on, guys. And here she is basically saying that, well, you'll see, as it pertains to Trump and what they should have done with him, impeachment and everything else.
And, you know, I go back to the responsibility of Congress here, mm-hmm. Because had the Senate actually gone through with the impeachment of Donald Trump, we would not be in this situation.
Oh, had they have just impeached the guy, they couldn't figure out why they wanted to impeach the guy, but had they just figured it out, he wouldn't be able to run now. Because they want to use the levers of power to make sure that they are in power all the time. And of course, the other thing that they always do is accuse everybody of doing all of the stuff that they're actually doing. Here's Hillary Clinton. And just listen to her. Is Donald Trump guilty of the things that she's accusing him of, or is she guilty of those very things? Go.
Because Putin does what he would like to do, kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive, you know, journalists and others into exile, rule without any check or balance. That's what Trump really wants. And so we have to be very conscious of how he sees the world, because in that world, he only sees strongman leaders. He sees Putin. He sees Xi. He sees Kim Jong-un in North Korea. Those are the people he is modeling himself after. And we've been down this road in our, you know, world history. We sure don't want to go down that again. And especially when my view, having negotiated with Putin and knowing that one of the reasons he went after me is because he knew I would, you know, deal with him in an appropriate way, and Trump would basically do whatever he wanted. It's really important to think about what could happen to our world with Trump back in the White House.
Everything she said there was what she does and what the Democrats do. What is she talking about, that Putin was afraid of her? Putin took Crimea under Barack Obama. You know who the Secretary of State was? It was Hillary Clinton. Putin did jack shit when Donald Trump was president, but they pretend he's the lapdog of Putin. Every single thing that they say is a lie. And the reason they're freaking out, and the reason they're trying to kick him off ballots, and the reason they've got all of these ridiculous trials and everything else, is because average people are waking up to this. Even people who either had Trump derangement syndrome or who have never voted for Republicans or anything else are just like, you know what, this guy has dementia, there's a bunch of jihadists over here, I can't take this anymore, are there any other options? Oh, there is this orange man, let me start thinking about this again. And they are very worried about that. Here's the devil incarnate himself from California.
You might have heard, Governor, in addition to the threats to women's rights out there across the country, you're sitting at a Planned Parenthood. There was a criminal trial that got underway this week in New York City. The full jury has been seated. We're expecting opening statements on Monday. There's been this kind of chorus out there that's been driving me a little crazy, just to be honest, suggesting this case only helps Trump politically. And I'm curious. I mean, you've seen the first week. You're talking to an undecided voter about why this case should matter to them. What do you tell them?
Well, I mean, it should matter. I mean, you got a president of the United States with 88 criminal counts that he's dealing with, and he's the first ex-president that is being submitted to this criminal case. That said, may I give you a personal point of view? This is a guy that doesn't care if he is the hero or the heel. He just wants to be the star. And in so many ways, he gets what he wants. And that's the bright spotlight and focus. Focus away from a lot of conversation we just had to focus again on him. And when we're focusing on him, I do worry electorally that he has a slight advantage.
Evil motherfucker. You know, he is the one that has destroyed California and destroyed San Francisco specifically before that as mayor. And he gets up there with his slick hair and his tan, and he just tells everybody that he's the good guy, right? When he actually is the heel, right? He wants to be the hero, but he actually is the heel. Anyway, he continues. Listen to this brilliant analysis here.
Before I let you go, I do have to ask you, I know it drives you crazy that people still speculate that you're waiting in the wings to run for president. I know it's not going to happen. You know it's not going to happen. But what do you think is fueling that speculation?
I don't know. I don't think much anymore. And I'm so proud of the president and the incredible job he did. Didn't surprise me at all. And I know it didn't surprise you. I really believe that. And that's what he did at the State of the State. I think it calmed everybody's nerves. And, you know, I said to my friend the other day, I said, you know, I'm this age, and we can get into debates around fitness. Look, I'd rather have 80 years behind me than those 88 federal criminal counts in front of me. And so I feel very good about Joe Biden's prospects.
Lizard person, that's what he is. Yes, okay, okay, you're right. Donald Trump does have 80 some odd federal charges in front of him, but that doesn't mean that it's just or good. So they put that out there as evidence that he's evil. But if you want to know what evil is when you have power, if you destroy absolutely everything around you. That is what Gavin Newsom has done. This is one of my favorite clips of Gavin Newsom ever. This is my buddy Adam Carolla back in 2013, 11 years ago, absolutely obliterating him in studio. It's just, this is just beautiful. Enjoy.
Half of African Americans in the state of California, roughly half of Latino families, have no access to a checking account or an ATM. Things we take for granted. They don't have a checking account.
What's wrong with them?
And because they don't have the resources to sock those things away.
Why do we have them?
A lot of different reasons, but roughly half those families don't. Where do they
why
end
do
up?
Armenians have them?
But where they end up is why? Check cashing places.
But I
want to
know why those
lenders,
groups, why
advantage.
Those two groups don't have access.
Well, it just happens to be that. We can
so
talk
they're
about
flawed?
No, they're hardly flawed, but they're struggling.
Genetically
folks are making
flawed.
Their word. Hardly. Not absolutely.
But okay,
not.
So but
absolutely
do Asians
not.
Have this problem?
I mean, a lot of communities have a lot of whites have these problems.
Oh,
but
so
I just,
that's not just black and Hispanic.
No, but
I'm
why'd giving
you bring up black and Hispanic?
Because the magnitude is ominous.
But why so many of them?
It just happens to be the
just,
magnitude.
That's the way God planned it?
Not at all.
Well, it what just, happened to them?
There are a lot of issues and with it, that the communities are struggling. A lot
why
of new
are they
immigrants.
Struggling?
A lot of different reasons. Lack
Hispanics
of opportunity.
Have been here. Blacks have been here longer than we've been here.
Well, we can surmise.
What
all
about
of it.
Asians? They were put in internment camps.
Yeah, we in fact it all initiated at San Francisco. And
all
the
right.
Chinese Exclusion Act came
so
out.
So they
of progressive
are they the check cash? Are they the check cash?
A lot of Asians certainly do.
Oh, so why don't you conclude
because
them?
Because the only reason why is the magnitude.
There's
the
so
problem.
Many more.
The magnitude in percentage.
But there's
terms
no way to figure out how that happened.
Of Africa. We could talk about it. You know what I'm dealing with? I don't want to have a sociological debate.
Sure,
I
why would
with
you?
No, here's why.
Why would you want to do that? Because the person from the Times wouldn't write good things about
oh,
you if
God.
You did that.
No, that's not the case because I
want
to deal with
get
reality.
Into that.
No.
You want to deal with reality.
I want to
I
deal with the reality,
reality
of people
is.
That are struggling. People are suffering. I want to deal with the problems in
why
a pragmatic
why are they
way.
Struggling
I don't
and
want
suffering?
An idea. We can hold hands and surmise about all these underlying
why are
reasons.
I don't want to do that. I
want
to know why they're struggling. Why are they struggling?
A lot of folks are struggling because they can't find jobs.
Why blacks and Hispanics? Why blacks and Hispanics?
Across the board. All socioeconomic.
Okay, I mean, so everybody.
Everybody's struggling.
So Asians are suffering just as much as blacks.
The face of welfare is not an African American family.
Oh, so it's
not
Asian, Jewish, it's all of them.
Caucasian, it's
okay,
a lot of
so
folks
we're all
in
struggling.
Society. A lot of folks are struggling.
Okay.
You see, it's just nothing. He's nothing. He's an evil lizard person wearing a human skin on top of him in a nice suit with slicked back hair. And when he gets the slightest bit of pushback against that identity politics bullshit that he is one of the prime purveyors of, that destroyed a city and then destroyed a state, you could see him just fold. I'm going to text Carolla, whatever his fanciest bottle of tequila he wants. It's on me. We're sending it to him today. So how do we defeat these people? Well, a beautiful segue from Adam Carolla, who's not only he's a good friend, he's a great podcaster, he's a fantastic comic, is we beat these people with comedy, right? Because that's the only way we're going to get back the culture, right? Like we can't just, you can see, I don't know what happened to me today, but you can see it. If you just relentlessly have to show these clips of these people, you start going a little bit crazy and you have to beat these people with comedy. I was thrilled to see my buddy Greg Gutfeld, the number one host in late night comedy, by the way, on Roseanne Barr's show. And here they are talking about the shift that's happening across comedy because of how wacky the left has gone.
But it's a huge cultural shift that a conservative comedy show and it is really well written and really funny and I like that comics can say things on there and they don't have to act like goons.
Yes,
you know they aren't dancing with hypodermic needles and shit like that. But you know you're saying something and it's a cultural shift because it's more to the conservative side and these guys, I mean. They're just drowning in unfunny.
And they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
They're scared. I do think it all came down to speech. Because think about the shift. The fact that, like, you're no longer in this camp, and the show is successful, and they all have something in common. It's the freedom to say what you want. And once the left and liberals gave that up, we snatched it.
Yeah, we did.
We snatched it and we ran with it. That's and right. You can tell how like uncomfortable comedians of the left are when they know that there's a line they can't cross. Meanwhile, you and I, we can say whatever we want and we share the risk. You get in trouble.
Yeah, we do.
You get in trouble. I will defend you. If I get in trouble, I hope you, I know you will. But I mean, you know what I mean? It's like we understand that we're here to say what we think. And if that goes away, what's left to do?
Then we'll be unfunny.
Then, yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny? Roseanne was a lefty her entire life. She ran for president, if you don't remember that, what, about 8 years ago, basically as like a complete socialist. She's gone through a mass red pilling. We used to be pretty close. I used to smoke weed with her all the time. The idea that this woman is now a conservative is completely bananas. But conservative just means roughly sane. That's all that it means. And of course, Greg is right that all of us now, again, the political labels don't matter, but it's everyone versus the woke, at least for now, because they are destroying everything at every freaking level, including comedy. So this, I saw this yesterday and I was like, man, this is wild. If you want to just see how the destruction of comedy has affected everything. So now Saturday Night Live, which has been on air for what, probably 50 years at this point. I think it started around 1973, something like that, 76. It's been around for about 50 years. It used to be funny. It really did used to be funny. It has not been funny in a long time. And now it is just a mouthpiece for the Democrats. But check out this skit from 2015, when it already was not really funny anymore, but every now and again they can get something through. Check this out and see how applicable it is to what's going on today. They would never do this today. This is only 9 years ago. Check this out.
Well, this is it. You need any help with your bag?
No, that's all right. I got it.
How about some walking around money?
Dad, it's okay.
Okay, just make sure to...
Call you when I get there? I know.
Yeah. You know, you could stay home, do another year of high school if you...
Very funny, Dad.
Well, I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'll see you. Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got it, kiddo. Looks like your ride's here. You be careful, okay?
Dad, it's just ISIS.
Take care of her.
ISIS. We'll take it from here, Dad.
Isn't that something? That's what they were doing 9 years ago, and that's what a generation of lefties have done. They have dropped their kids off at school, and they have become Hamas supporters and furry jihadists and genderqueer Marxist psychopaths. That is what they have done. I want to show you one more thing from the world of comedy. Shane Gillis, who we've shown you a bunch of clips on, a guy who got canceled and has then reappeared and magically started telling the truth. Here he is talking about how bad old Joe Biden's reputation is amongst college students.
Yeah.
One guy said, I swear to God, one frat kid yelled from his balcony, "You probably voted for Biden."
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which actually hurt. That one hurt.
That hurt.
I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, but that's an insult. That's an insult. That's like, you are a pussy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he was saying.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's for sure what he said.
You can look at someone and be like, Biden voter. It's like, whoa, dude.
Feeble.
Whoa.
That's our show for today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you tomorrow. Postgame show at RubenReport.local.com in 30 seconds. See ya.
Largest mosque outside of the Middle East.
To me, when I hear the word mosque, I think of terrorism.
You guys will have the choice between two different designs. This is design one, and this is design two. So who here supports design one?
Nobody.
Okay, so you're all for design two.
We don't want either one.
You don't like this construction. Tell me about your dream mask.
There is no dream mask. We don't want a mask. Mask, as soon as you said mask, you ruined it.
Oh, no. I didn't imply anybody here is racist. Of course not.
I am. I'm racist toward Muslims.
Let me show you how your town would change.
Oh, hell no. You're kidding me, right? You change the name on that, and I guarantee you're going to have a fight in your hands. Dang a goddamn thing about that we like.
This town's lucky to have black people in it.
Yeah, of course you're lucky to have black people. They add a lot to the society. Thank you, sir. Finally, somebody who appreciates multiculturalism.
You totally missed it.
Sir, you are completely right. The benefit of having African Americans means a more diverse... Thank you, sir. Don't be ashamed.
You're saying there's black people in Kingman that aren't welcome there either, but we tolerate them.
You are triggered, and you are feeling some anger.
You're pulling the trigger harder now. We don't want to hear that. You really think this is calming us?
This will calm
us. It's not calming us. It's pissing us off. I understand exactly why there was told no weapons here.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the post-game wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.